The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
It's somewhere in the netherworld between the president's decided what he wants to do about the deal and telling the rest of us what exactly that will entail. He has to do it, at least assuming he conforms to past practice, by the 15th of October, when the next certification to the Congress that Iran is complying with the deal is due. I think the smart money says he isn't going to make that certification. What there is some speculation about is that there's going to be kind of a Solomonic splitting of the baby, where he says they are not complying, but we're going to continue to abide by the agreement while we try to renegotiate it. That's one choice. I think that's a lousy idea, as did our 44 other colleagues on that letter. The alternative, it seems to me, is the one that former UN Ambassador John Bolton has recommended, and I think makes a lot more sense, which is to get out of the thing, to stop pretending that they're complying, yes, but also stop binding ourselves to observe an agreement. And by the way, it's not even a signed deal, for crying out loud. It's what's now been called a political understanding.
Oh, great.
Political
wonderful.
Understanding is not bearing up, and certainly it's not bearing anything but poison fruit.
So what happens if the president doesn't go against this by the 15th of October? What will happen then?
Well, I think he'll wind up. I mean, the third alternative is he does what he's done twice before at the insistence of his national security advisor, H.R. McMaster, and Rex Tillerson at the State Department and Jim Mattis at the Defense Department, which is to say, oh, no, they really are complying.
I mean,
this isn't true.
Okay.
This isn't true. So he has that option. He's indicated he doesn't like that option. So my guess is he's going to do one of the other two. I think just not doing anything isn't probably one of the options in play.
Could what I'm saying is, you know, let's say in November he suddenly sees the light. Could he stop this thing after October 15th?
Oh, sure. No, I mean, look, the nature of the requirement that he is currently facing is, if he doesn't do it this 90 days, he's going to have to do it again another 90 days. So, I mean, there will be other opportunities. It's just that this is getting worse by the day, as we've seen with the North Korean deal, by the way. And part of why this is so vexing about the North Korean problem and the Iranian problem coming to a head approximately the same time is these two nations are joined at the hip.
They're those two are in solidarity. They absolutely.
Technologies. Mm-hmm. They're, well, no, I mean, not just, you know, in their enmity towards us. Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. But in terms of building ballistic missiles capable of, you know, placing a nuclear weapon on or over our country, they're both working together for that purpose. And this is partly why I think it's important that we stop pulling our punches, in a manner of speaking. We stop pretending these threats are not real and frankly getting much worse.
Down the road a piece, 10, 20, whatever years it is, if we do not do something to stop Iran now, to drop out of this deal, whatever it is, whatever action we take, if we don't stop them now, will they become North Korea? Will we be having the same arguments about Iran as we are about North Korea?
Absolutely. And it isn't going to be 10 years. That's really one of the most insidious things about this. I call it the Obama bomb deal. They essentially allowed the Iranians to leave in place and to continue to work on all of the stuff that they need to do to have nuclear weapons. The idea was that they just wouldn't bring it to, you know, fruition until 10 or 15 years from the date it wasn't signed. But the trouble is that's a schedule that I think is susceptible to break out, to surprise, to cheating. And best case, it isn't very attractive. If any of those other things eventuate, it's a really big problem. And you're right to make the comparison to North Korea on this point, because you may remember back in the 1990s, Bill Clinton did a deal with the North Koreans that was supposed to keep them from having them.
Very similar. The parallels are incredible. Yeah, the parallels are. And that's what was so frustrating during this Iran deal, because of those parallels. Hey, real quick, and by the way, I'm speaking with Frank Gaffney, founder and CEO of the Center for Security Policy. Frank, I have a clip that I want to share of the Iranian president. Listen carefully.
Exiting such an agreement would carry a high cost for the United States of America, and I do not believe that Americans would be willing to pay such a high cost for something that will be useless for them. It will yield no results for the United States, but at the same time, it will generally decrease and cut away and chip away at international trust placed in the United States of America.
So basically, Frank, he's saying that it'll be an economic problem. America will suffer greatly economically if we back out of this deal. And number two, we will lose respect and credibility around the world. What are your thoughts?
Well, that's one way of reading what he said. Another way is that there's an even more direct and kinetic kind of threat involved. Yes, I think his at best, he's saying that we will be somehow a pariah. The truth of the matter is that there are other countries, notably the Russians and Chinese, who are allied with the Iranians, enabling the Iranians, but also the Europeans, who think they're going to make some money out of doing deals with the Iranians, that will not be happy if we make it clear that they have a choice to do business with us or to do business with Iran. But that seems to me to be where we are, because that kind of support for Iran, whether it's of the political kind, the strategic kind, the economic kind, is helping a cancer that will threaten us for sure, but others as well, to metastasize. And I don't think we can continue to pretend otherwise.
So if you've got North Korea and Iran working together and sharing certain resources or information, what would stop them from, a couple of years down the road, once they get more sophisticated technology, helping other what we would consider rogue states or threats to America develop the same technology?
This is a great question, and it's unbelievable how infrequently it's asked. The truth of the matter is, Russia helped China get the bomb. China helped Pakistan get the bomb. China's and Pakistan have been helping not only the North Koreans, but the Iranians get the bomb. And you can bet, especially given that for the Pakistanis, for the North Koreans, and in due course for the Iranians, exporting nuclear weapons technology is a cash crop. It is a valuable commodity. You will see these guys selling or otherwise making available their know-how to still other dangerous places, some of which may be closer to us. It may be the Cubans. It may be the Venezuelans. Who knows? But the trouble is, more of these nations that are dangerous to us getting more and more lethal capabilities is not a good thing. Not for us, I don't believe, not for the world.
Interesting. You're right. Cash crop, and those countries that do not have that technology, they see this as their seat at the table. This is their ticket in.
Well, very clearly, again, everybody looked at what happened to Muammar Gaddafi when he gave up his weapons of mass destruction.
Didn't work out so well, did it?
Didn't. And North Korea is determined not to let that happen to them. And you can bet that the Iranians are as well. And truth be told, when they get the bomb, you'll have a lot of people in this country saying, oh, well, now we can't do anything about that. We just have to accustom ourselves to it.
We just have to suffer through it. We just have to deal with them.
Yeah, accustoming ourselves to being threatened with mass destruction, which is, by the way, what the North Koreans are doing to us right now, as you may have noticed, notably by threatening to attack our grid. I listened a moment ago to your comments about Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. There's an object lesson here, folks. As we watch what's happening to a Puerto Rico without electricity, think about what an America without electricity would be like. We're going to come to the aid of the Puerto Ricans, to be sure, but we're at risk ourselves, especially if Kim Jong-un of North Korea, or for that matter, the Iranian mullahs, when they get their capabilities, act on threats to take down our electric grid, which is what Kim Jong-un has done.
And Americans are not prepared to do without our technology for any significant period of time. If technology were to go down for just a few days in any sizable portion of America, I'm not sure we bounce back. It'll be bedlam.
Mass panic.
Well, look, you know, millennial without YouTube or without, you know, Facebook is a, you know, lost soul. But I'm talking about not having water.
That'd be stunning.
Water mm-hmm. or food. I mean, you're talking about a nation-ending threat, and that's the problem. So when we fix Puerto Rico's grid, we've got to make sure it's resilient, not just against storms, but against all hazards. And we've got to be doing the same thing for ours as well.
Frank, how can we find out more about the Center for Security Policy? How can we follow you on social media?
Easiest way is at our website, securefreedom.org, and I'm at Frank Gaffney.
All right, securefreedom.org. We'll tweet out a link to that stuff. Thanks for joining us today, buddy. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Knowledge is power. Tweet at us with the hashtag #WhatILearnedToday. This is the Morning Blaze with Doc Thompson on the Blaze Radio Network.